not, we'll just ask for your attention. At Judge O'Quinn's request, the food and refreshments will not be served until after this opening ceremony, which should conclude in about 45 minutes. I want to wish everybody a good morning. I want to welcome you to this celebration of life being held in honor of Judge Preston O'Quinn, who passed away last Thursday at the age of 76. Judge O'Quinn may have been referred to in many ways, but never would he have been considered a man of few words. Yet all of his words were chosen very carefully, and his reference to this gathering as a celebration of life is no different. So we are not here to mourn the passing of a friend and a loved one, but rather to celebrate having shared part of our lives with this most interesting and colorful man. Speaking of colorful, and because Judge O'Quinn was insistent that this gathering be kept on a light note, before I introduce his family, I'll tell you a quick story from his younger years of practicing law. One morning, as a young attorney, Preston showed up for court before Judge Joe Vidrine, wearing a very bright red suit. Judge Vidrine admonished Preston from the bench not to ever appear in his court again wearing that bright red suit. Preston dutifully acknowledged Judge Vidrine's instruction and assured him it would not happen again. When Preston appeared in court before Judge Vidrine the next morning, he was not wearing his red suit. He was wearing his bright green one. And that was the beginning of a very colorful legal career. I'm Trent Brignac, and Judge O'Quinn requested that I introduce his family as well as the guest speakers this morning. First, I'd like to introduce his wife, Linda. More often referred to by Judge O'Quinn as Sweetie Pie. His oldest daughter, Toni, affectionately referred to as Catfish Eater, and her daughter, Lily. His oldest son, Gilbert, or Gilbo. Where's Gilbo? His wife, Katie, and their children, Sergi and Anastasia. His second daughter, Jessica, also known as Melanippi. Her husband, Dr. Paul Friedlander, and their son, Alex. And finally, his youngest child, Pokey, more often called Poco by his dad. Pokey's wife, Donna, and their son, Preston III. They also have a young daughter named Allison, who is not here today. Also present is Judge O'Quinn's only brother, Gilbert Winky O'Quinn, and his wife, Margaret Chicken O'Quinn. And Judge O'Quinn's only sister, Miss Mary Alice Fontenot, and her husband, Mr. Leonard Glenn Fontenot. I would also like to introduce Judge O'Quinn's loyal secretary of the past many years, Artie Fontenot. And I want to sincerely thank Artie for all the hard work she put in during the past week putting this program together in a very difficult time. So thank you very much, Artie. Before introducing our first speaker, I would like to share a few thoughts about Judge O'Quinn. I considered myself very fortunate to have practiced law before Judge O'Quinn early in my career. Despite our difference in age, we became close friends. I learned a lot from Judge O'Quinn, both in the law and in politics. As you probably know, Judge O'Quinn rarely met an adjective he didn't like. But one that reminds me of him the most is the term philosophical. Judge O'Quinn had a very philosophical approach to life. I believe that is evident here today. It was from him I learned no defeat was too overwhelming and no victory should not be taken in stride. His philosophical approach to the law served him well during his tenure as Evangeline Parish District Court Judge. His decisions were thoroughly thought out and well-reasoned. As anyone who knew him will attest, he enjoyed life to the fullest. And equally significant, he made life more interesting for all of us. Without further ado, I would like to introduce our first guest speaker, Senator Eric LaFleur, a practicing attorney, relative, and good friend of Judge Oquan. Welcome, Mr. LaFleur.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Eric LaFleur. I'm the area state senator. I'm also an attorney here in town. I'm also a relative of Preston Oquan. We have, in my family, we had five kids. The Oquans had four. We spent most of our younger days together at their house, or them at our house, whether it was in the swimming pool, playing Marco Polo, or eating watermelon, or whatever the case might be. We spent a lot of time there, and it was it was a great deal of fun. Preston and Linda were also very, very good friends with my parents. Preston enjoyed trips on the airplane to the LSU football games. Jessica and Pokey did not enjoy one particular trip in that airplane because it crashed on the I-10. But they are here today despite that plane crash. Preston was known by many names. Caligula was one. Vyasuk is the one that I referred to him as, sweet sugar, sweet oldie. He always told me that he was a man of the people, not a member of the bourgeoisie. He was not a blue blood. He represented the proletariat, the little man. His decisions were not just well thought out, they were also appropriately embellished. And that was only to drive home the importance of his opinion. As a judge, he was particularly colorful. He started court, the docket usually said 8. If you weren't there at 7, you didn't have a very good chance of winning if you didn't get there an hour before. He had a joie de vivre that probably no one has had. And I guess it's unfortunate that somebody who loved life as much as he did would choose to leave it so prematurely. But even though he made that decision, and we may be disappointed in it, it would be unfortunate for that to overshadow all of the contributions that he made to his practice, the contributions that he made to our parish, the contributions that he made to his family in providing for them, and just appreciating everything that they ever did. There's rarely a time that you didn't speak to Preston that he didn't outline exactly what was happening in every one of his child's lives, what careers, where they were in their careers, what their kids were doing. In every way, there's nobody that could have appreciated and loved his family as much as he did. In my family, annually for Easter, we had egg pocking contests where we competed with one another in big tournaments. I'll never forget, I had some friends that came in from New York. This was their first time to the South, much less to Louisiana or to Ville Platte. We had the pleasure to go over to Preston's house in a school bus, and we had an egg pocking tournament. And of course, Preston came out with bunny ears, a pink cape, and a bunny tail, and declared himself Paco du Monde, because he was truly the Paco du Monde. It should come as no surprise in light of the time that we spent with the Oquans at their house, and the fact that, of course, we're relatives, that later on in my life, I would finish and graduate with a degree in French, history, and law, all three of which were Preston's favorite subjects. So it was a pleasure to know Preston. It was a pleasure, I thank the Oquans for letting us borrow their grandfather and their father and have him incorporated in our lives and in our family, because he was truly influential and truly a pleasure to know. It reminds me of that song. The first song that I ever had to learn the lyrics to was the little 45 that we played at the Oquans' house, "Mon Bon Ami." Preston is the man for me. And I still remember the entire jingle. I tried to remember the lyrics, because I would have sung it for you today, and I'm sure that would have been a lot of fun for everybody. But my bon ami, Preston is the man for me. He truly was the man for a lot of us. He's the man for me and the man for you, a good friend to the legal community, and a great dad, a great grandfather, and somebody that we'll remember for a very, very long time, and somebody that the parish would very much appreciate the idea that the fact that he decided that he wanted contributions to be made to the library shows you just what kind of intellectual man he was and how he wanted to spread that intellect and continue to be the great raconteur extraordinaire that he was. So thank you for having me. I'm only leaving because I have to be in Baton Rouge for a committee meeting at 1 o'clock. But thank you, Cole, and the rest of the family. I enjoyed being here, and thank you, Preston, for inviting me to speak. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator LaFleur. I would next like to introduce the woman that orchestrated Judge Oakland's retirement 46 years ago. The event truly touched his heart, and I know he was forever grateful. Ms. Louisa DeVille.
Several months ago, Preston called my husband, Doug, and had an extraordinary conversation with him. Extraordinary for anyone else, but not when considering it was Preston. He said, Douglas, you know, he said, when I die, I want Louisa to talk about me. He proceeded to tell Doug where he wanted to be buried. In fact, he wanted Doug to take him for a ride to see the Biedo Cemetery. They made plans that before they could get together, Preston had his injury, and Doug still regretted it, that they never made that trip. Anyway, I said to Doug, oh, what, Preston, sing and dance, or do a little skit, but I think I was completely flabbergasted. In fact, I said I would invent a new word. It would be flattergasted. Later, I told Margaret Chapman, my cousin, about it, and she said, well, he was grateful to you for giving him that retirement program. And that's probably why he chose you to speak at his memorial, not knowing that speaking is not my best talent. But anyway, grateful I can understand, but when you eulogize someone, you should know them very well. But this is what Preston wanted, and this is what he's going to get. What I knew of Preston was what I heard Doug tell me from his experience and what Doug heard Winky tell me. Actual conversations with Preston I shared once a year at Easter time when our families met for the great Puck Off, which Eric explained to me. We spoke of family and friends and politics, which I hated and didn't understand, but I listened until it sounded like to me. I believe that Preston believed that most of the world's miseries were brought about by organized religion. War and cruelty visited upon the innocent under the name of God. We agreed that it's silly to think that churches have the monopoly on goodness and morality. He would quote so many quotes off the top of his head. So I took a lot of time and found three of them in a book called Poisonous Quotes. I think he would appreciate this. It's Mark Twain. Man is the only animal that has the true religion. Several of them. Voltaire wrote, religion is the source of all imaginable folly and disturbances. It is the parent of fanaticism and civil discord. It is the enemy of mankind. And last, by George Bernard Shaw, Christianity might be a good thing if anyone ever tried it. These are the quotes I heard Preston just say off the top of his head. And when he spoke, he had a hearty laugh at the end. He had a great sense of humor. He couldn't stand a humorless person, nor abide one who took himself too seriously. He had a very healthy sense of skepticism, which is almost universally lacking today, even in educated circles. I said to him one time, I said, Preston, I could walk into my teacher's lounge and say, last night I saw a ghost in my bedroom. And too many would say, really? What did it look like? UFOs, spontaneous combustion, crop circles. I say, Preston, do they not read or watch Discovery Channel or LPB or anything like this? He'd say, Lisa, they might have education, but they're not educated people. Again, I only knew him from afar, but I loved hearing stories about him in court and in his life. I loved his flamboyance, his mighty intellect, his crushing will, and his rapier tongue. Mama loved reading the articles that would appear in the Gazette sometimes, where he lambasted some unfortunate defendant in the most colorful use and of all superlatives and alliteration, like the mad, miscreant, miserable, alliterative adjectives he used, but he was wonderful. He had such courage. He was fearless in the face of criticism. Doug would tell me often, "Baby, Kristen is not afraid of anyone or anything." I'm sorry that I never went to visit him after that retirement party, because I wanted to tell him how much we enjoyed doing that for him. In the early stages of planning, I talked to a few people, but when I talked to Susie Lemoyne, I knew I had found my right-hand woman. She said, "Sure, we can do that." I wanted him and all his family to know that all those people were so very glad to do that for him. We practiced after everyone got off work, and we had a blast. The only thing I needed that I didn't have was cash. I mean, I could do the words in the program, but we had to buy stuff. So Susie sent me to a Mr. Chuck West, and I don't know if he's here, but he told me not to worry, that the lawyers would all help. And they certainly did. Jessica would call me from New Orleans, and she always wanted to help, but she was frustrated because she was so far away. But she was right in there with me. I especially want to thank his daughter, Tony. She really stepped up for me there. I still see Mama and my Aunt Carmen Frugier in their car with balloons, 79 and 80 years old, trying to drive to their emergency flash zone to deliver them to the little program place. And I'm sure he had faults, like we don't, but I will never listen to any of them. Some will say the way he chose to exit life was cowardly. That's nonsense. There wasn't a cowardly bone in that man's body. To thine own self be true. There is hardly a handful of us who can say that we live our lives by that motto. Someone said, "The mature person is one who knows himself." That is Preston to a T. Some people die and are never mourned. How sad. But this big, big man will always be remembered. He's a legend already. And I'm very glad I was thrown in his path, however briefly.
Thank you very much, Louisa. We next have a dear friend of Judge Oquan, who was very instrumental in his political career. Judge Oquan spoke often of how helpful she was to him in his last two campaigns. Please welcome Ms. Margaret Frank.
I would like to begin by telling you a story about a man I met some 40 plus years ago back in the watermelon field in the Fobo area. He often made his way down a long dusty road to our house and then into our field to get watermelons, which I thought was ironic, because every time he came, he was in a suit with a two-tone matching shoes and a hat, had the tie, and he was always dressed up. I eventually asked my father, why did this man come into the watermelon field, okra, whatever we had, peas, he took that along with him, wearing a suit, because it really didn't make sense to me. My dad told me he was a lawyer, and that was just the kind of man he was, and no one was to ask him why he wore a suit. So, of course, I never did ask him why he wore that suit. One day, he came over to the house, and, of course, by that time, I was about 8 years old when I first met him. A year later, he came over to our house again. He and my father were sitting out talking politics. They decided they needed to go to a store called Roy. And they invited me to go with them. And I did. I went there, got to the store. They got out of the car, walked me to the door of the store, and gave me a packet. They told me to give a card to whomever came to the store. Well, they went on inside the store. And as people arrived, I'm out handling cards, not knowing what I was doing. And then I decided to read one of the cards. It said, "Vote Elaine Peake for Sheriff." The more I got to know Preston, the more I wanted to know more about him. He was a man of courage, man of his word. If he said it, you could bank on it. He was a man of integrity. He had moral values, and that is what I wanted the most of. His name was Honesty. He was firm, but fair. He is no longer with us today in the flesh, but his legacy will live with us for generations to come. He is the one that taught me how to be a politician, a real one. He always told me to choose whose side I wanted to be on and stick there, not to play the game. Just be fair and honest with everyone. And I learned how to do that. So he taught me a lot about politicians and taught me how to be a straightforward person. I will miss him a lot. And to his family, thank you also for accepting me.
Thank you very much, Ms. Frank. I would now like to welcome Judge Oquan's only sister. She, along with Judge Oquan's dear friend, Susie Lemoyne, who could not be here today, are part of a project in which Judge Oquan provided valuable insight, as she will further explain. Please welcome Ms. Mary Alice Fontenot.
Apparently, Preston had some very special friends that maybe they didn't know how special they were to him. But today, we all know that they were special. And Susie Lemoyne was apparently one of these special people. So she had to leave town, had plans to leave, in fact, flew out this morning, and was unable to be with us, but she left this message for him and for you. "I'm humbled that Preston included me in his magnificent celebration of life event. An endeavor of this magnitude is yet another example of the maverick that Preston was. It is with sincere regret that I'm unable to deliver my thoughts in person, but I feel confident that if Preston knew that I was flying out to explore the wild, wild west for a few days, he'd be the first one to wave goodbye. Because of our shared fascination with the enduring story of Evangeline and his involvement in helping to develop the Evangeline Project, I feel comfortable in assuming that this was the reason for my inclusion in this memorable event. He saw the historical significance of the centennial event and the potential of a bronze statue of Evangeline for connecting our parish to this international icon forever, and he certainly wanted to be remembered for that. Preston was a founding committee member of the Evangeline Project, and we enjoyed many lively discussions on how we could validate our conclusion that the naming of our parish was due to the popularity of the poem Evangeline in the time of our founding fathers. He felt that our founding fathers were true visionaries in choosing a name that had potential for worldwide recognition and connection to aficionados of this famous story. So in the spirit of the Evangeline Parish that Preston loved and served so well as an attorney, a judge, and a spokesperson, I offer to his memory this image of our Evangeline, the one that he agreed would be so compelling. The Evangeline Project will continue as he would wish. Perhaps we will feel his presence on the courthouse lawn once again in 2011, when the statue of Evangeline is dedicated. Preston, I feel privileged to have shared thoughts and laughter with you over the years. The western sunset that Philip and I will see tonight will be in your honor. Sincerely composed, Susie."
Thank you very much, Ms. Mary Alice. I would now like to introduce you to a dear friend of Judge Oquan, who has since become a dear friend of mine. He has helped Judge Oquan with everything from driving him in a campaign parade to driving him to a doctor's visit. The three of us have shared good conversations over good cups of coffee many times over the last several years. Please welcome Mr. Bobby Doucette.
Hey, Preston, it's up to you to do this to me. By the way, no problem. I just want to introduce, which I know Mr. Preston wouldn't want. There's some physical therapist back there from Opelousas General that he loves, and I want y'all to recognize him. Which he gave them a little bit of hell. I don't know if it's not a lot, but I call it a little bit. Anyway. My grandfather, Joe Doucette. I said, Papa, what are you doing? He said, Bobby, I want you to come with me. I said, what? I'd go with my grandfather, I'd call him Papa, at Mr. Preston's office. And he said, sit here. And they speak a lot of French, which Miss Linda doesn't like. Me and Mr. Preston, that was our cup of tea. He loved the French. And when I show up in the morning, he had to touch my hand before I get my cup of coffee. But one thing I can say, if y'all ever had a cup of coffee made by the judge, I was one of them. And a Superman. My grandfather would bring me there. I said, Pop, why you bring me here to listen to all of this? He said, I want you to listen to this. You're going to need this man one day. And now I look back. I was always wondering why my grandfather was doing this, but he knew why he was doing this. That's why there's a bunch of young kids that really need to really and listen and take notes to elderly. He always did tell me, you learn from the old, you learn from the young, but the old are more wiser, and the more you learn from them, the wiser you get. And I did get wiser. I said, Lord, Mr. Papa, you got me around this man. This man talks, and he's loud. Believe me, at Opelousas General, I'd get off that elevator, I could hear. All through the hall, but that wasn't it. Mr. Preston always did such a mistake. He said, Bobby, when that blessed day come, guess what? I want you to talk. I said, what? What am I going to say? He said, you go find something. And that's how he was. One Monday morning I showed up. He said, well, today is the day. I said, what are you talking about? Today we go on to that place where I want you to put me. I said, Mr. Preston, what are you talking about? I'm telling you. See, Leonard coming, we're going to take a ride. We'll take a ride. I said, Lord, look at this. We were out there in the boondocks. When we got in that cemetery, we brought him on the four-wheeler, almost all the way there, man, Mr. Lennon. Then he had to walk. And then he started showing us everything what he wanted. So no problem, man, he says, right there I want. So he said, bring a pipe. Bring some red paint. We're going to drive that in the ground, and when that blessed day comes, that's what I want to do. And all, there's a lot of people that misjudged Mr. Preston for anything, but this was a man of value and a man that wanted nothing but the best for Evangeline Parish. And anything you wanted to know about Evangeline Parish, if he didn't know, he'd find it. Whether it was French, English, whatever, he'd find it for you. And I said, Lord, you know, I'm blessed to know this man. I'd get up there and say, Bobby, what's the problem? I'd tell him my problem. He said, you ain't got no problem. I said, what you want to mean? He said, I got it. He said, watch, I'm going to cook you up right quick. I said, better day. Hey, Papa, he left me with a blessing, and a blessing to help my family. And I thank the Lord for being able to know Mr. Preston and know his family. He'd always call me. We'd get in the doctor's office. That's my son. They'd turn around, they'd look. He said, they call us salt and pepper. I said, yeah, I'm pepper, he's salt. And that's how he was. That's how he was. He was a character and a well-blessed man. Me and this man would rise. Say, Bobby, turn the radio off, because he said, we got it. He said, I got you. And man, the stuff this man would tell you, the knowledge he put in your head, some stuff I didn't even know how to deal with. This man would tell me some stuff, and when it comes up, I know how to deal with it. And I feel I'm very blessed that my grandfather left me. He knew he was leaving this earth before Mr. Preston, but he left me in Mr. Preston's hands to show me better. And now Mr. Preston kept telling me 2 weeks ago, "Bob, you got something." I said, "What you want of me?" He told me that now. I said, every morning I'd be there 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30. So I'd get there at 6, but I had to wait downstairs for the kitchen to open to get his breakfast. So I'd go upstairs. I said, "Why am I going to do this?" I said, "I'll show up at 6:30. I'd get his breakfast, then go up." Here I'm going up in the elevator for him. Everybody coming to work, the phone, thring, thring, thring. I say, "Wait, Preston, I'm coming." I'd walk in the room, the phone would be ringing. I had this food. I said, "That's what you want?" "Yes." But no problem. I felt like I was very blessed to know this man. And he kept telling me, "Bobby, you have something." I said, "Mr. Preston, which one of me?" He said, "You have something." And the same something my grandfather left me with him, he's telling me to leave it with somebody else. And I have to find somebody. With the good Lord help, I will find somebody. He wants me to leave that with somebody. And it took me a while to figure it out, but I finally figured it out. And you never known a man until you known this man here. Evangeline Parish, matter of fact, the whole state of Louisiana, they're missing out on something. And why Mr. Preston did what he did, and nobody know what I know. When I go in the morning, this man was a reader. That mind, you couldn't touch that mind for nothing. But the body, the things he tell me about how he hurt, and I mean hurt. So I really respect him. I really respect him. And it's just something similar. I'm driving down his driveway Thursday morning. I'm running about 5 minutes late. I'm normally there about 6:30. I drove down that long driveway, lights on everywhere, and it's to know, only God knows this, and I can't explain, nobody will ever explain it to me. I drove down that driveway and never seen him laying there, looking straight to his house, and never seen it. Normally parked to the back, because after we get through with our breakfast, I take the car, I have errands, I go running for it. I said, "I'm going to park to the left, right here in the front, walk around my truck." And seeing this, I said, "Lord, I know I'm not seeing it, but it was." And it was a time. And they asked me, "How you do to deal with this?" I said, "You know what I was taught? I always listen to the elderly. You always listen to your elderly. They always tell you that." My grandfather always did tell me, you know, even though a lot of people don't want to realize this, we have a book of life. And it's in God's hand. Whatever God got in that book of life, you go through it whether you like it or not. So it's just something that I have to go through, and he'll help me to deal with it. And that's all I have to say today. For whoever that can and want to take this, take it to your advantage. Listen to your elders. Respect your elders. What and nothing wrong with yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, if you only know how far that brings you. It brings you a whole lot further than the ugliness you tell the elderly people.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Our next guest hails from Lafayette, Louisiana. He and Judge O'Quinn go back to the early days of their legal careers, and in fact, prior to that time in college. He is an excellent lawyer who Judge O'Quinn had the utmost respect for, both as a friend as well as an attorney. Please welcome Mr. Bob McBride.
Good morning. I promised that I would deliver a talk for a minute or two, and I'm going to keep that promise. Preston O'Quinn was my friend for more than 50 years. We met at SLI when both of us got out of the Air Force after serving in the Korean War. Both of us were in the Far East. When we got out of the Air Force, we registered at SLI. We struggled through college there and went to LSU Law School with our wives and young families. At that time, we lived on about, I believe it was about $125 a month. on the GI Bill. We happened to live in plywood huts right across from Tiger Stadium, but to our great joy, this was during the Paul Dietzel era of LSU championship football, and we took full advantage of it. I read a comment this morning referring to Preston Oakland as a teetotaler who hated alcohol, and this is quite true. But my association with Preston predated this posture. I assure you, when Preston became a teetotaler, it was time. His conversion to abstinence without medical intervention or social help is a tribute to the mettle of the man. Preston was by far, we've heard the term colorful, he was by far my most colorful friend, both in dress and demeanor. I mentioned to Pokey this morning, he has on an orange tie. Preston came to my office in Lafayette with an orange suit, orange patent leather shoes, and an orange, whatever he called it, fedora or hat. Before becoming a teetotaler, he was the only friend I had who had converted the den in front of his house into a neighborhood bar room. We had free drinks for all. I heard Bobby mention that Preston talked loud, and that's right. Preston never learned to whisper. That didn't exist. When you had a conversation with him, it was a public conversation. And he never did things in half measures. Not his drinking, not his dress, his conversation, his pursuit of legal issues, his conversion to teetotalism, his friendship, his decisions from the bench. Each got full measure, everything that he had. As you all know, Preston lived a lifetime of politics and law. He lived it fully. I now bid farewell to Prestonius, the Mediterranean man who reigned in Evangeline Parish and what he referred to as a paterfamilias, a head of the family. I'm grateful and proud to have had Preston as a friend, as a true friend. I loved him as a brother. I will miss him greatly.
Thank you, Mr. McBride. Last but not least is the man who Judge Oakland requested deliver his posthumous farewell, a successful local businessman and longtime friend of Judge Oakland. Please welcome Mr. Eugene Tojo Putnam.
Yes, I'm honored to be here on behalf of Preston, my friend. We all know how long-winded he was, so I need to begin quickly to read his posthumous farewell address. All good things must come to an end, or to borrow the words of Don Meredith on Monday Night Football years ago, turn out the lights, the fort is over. I must agree with the maxim that life is a journey. Mine began on May 25th, 1932, between 1 and 2 a.m., so I was told, when I was born in my grandparents' home, which no longer exists, in Las Bordas, and raised until I was 7 years old in my parents' home, which still exists, on the Villeplatte-Chitanya Road, Highway 29. I was a child of the Great Depression. We moved to Villeplatte when my journey continued until recently when it ended. My parents were good to me until I left home. I temporarily left Villeplatte as a member of the U.S. Air Force and journeyed west to Texas, then further west to Arizona, then to a port of embarkation still further west in California, and then continued westward until it became the Far East in Asia, to several countries therein, visiting Tokyo, Manila, Hong Kong, Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City, and many other Asian cities, towns, and villages. And then after 4 years, home again. I completed my university studies, received a Juris Doctor degree from U.S. Law School, returned to Villeplatte, vowing to remain there until life's journey was complete. During the greater part of the journey, from 1959 until 5 or 6 years ago, life was good. I was a country trial lawyer for over 30 years, then served as district judge for nearly 12 years. I engaged in the art, or perhaps more commonly stated as the game of politics, for those combined 40 years, experiencing both the agony of defeat and the ecstasy of victory. As a lawyer and judge, I did my level best to contribute not only to the legal community, but toward the advancement and betterment of Evangeline Parish, so that it could find its place in the sun and be counted with the best. I hope that I have succeeded to some extent in making it a better place in which to raise our children. Not too long ago, I felt that my journey was in jeopardy. My gears were slipping, my wheel bearings grinding, my spark plugs not firing in unison. In short, I was running out of gas and becoming an obstruction on life's highway. Many of my contemporaries, friends, and classmates, high school and college, had predeceased me. True, I was not the prophet Daniel, but the handwriting was on the wall. The grim reaper's footsteps were becoming louder. As Omar Khayyam, the Persian poet, mathematician, and astronomer, wrote in part of one of the quatrains in his Rubaiyat, "The leaves of life keep dropping one by one." All four of my children have always treated me well, and their children, my grandchildren, are following in their footsteps. My family is composed of an international group. There are Russians, Jews, and yes, Lafayette Cajuns. It is a miniature United Nations. Before my decline, I led a quality life, and my journey took me to many places. For example, to Rome, where Caesar dwelt. I walked the very same streets of the Forum that he did. I glided on a gondola at night through the canals of Venice while being serenaded by the gondolier as he propelled it by a pole. I ascended the steps of the Dardanon, the chief temple of the goddess Athena, built on the Acropolis of Athens. I looked down on the night lights of Paris from the Eiffel Tower. I enjoyed a show at the Crazy Horse Saloon. I walked along the top of walls, the ancient walled city of Carcassonne, France, and explored the Visigoth ruins in the Pyrenees Mountains south of there. I kissed the Blarney Stone in the Blarney Castle, Ireland. On the Sea of Galilee, while eating Peter's perch on the patio of a restaurant which extended over the sea or lake. I bathed in the Dead Sea, the lowest point on earth. I penetrated the forests of the Gabon, Africa, bouncing around in a jeepster. I strolled through the streets of Istanbul. These are only some examples. There were many more, too numerous to mention. Alas, now I could hardly drag my pain-racked body to Walmart's to go marketing a mile from my home. But let me hasten to point out that I equally enjoyed a turtle sauce piquant at Nonzenon Quinn's Outdoor Kitchen in Point Blue, or a squirrel supper in Turkey Creek. My friends were many, from all walks of life, carpenters, bank chairmen, bricklayers, doctors, roughnecks, large landowners, tenant farmers, day laborers, wealthy businessmen, school teachers, lawyers, used car salesmen, black folk, white folk. For me, there were no big shots, no little shots. I loved all those guys, not for the color of their skin or the thickness of their pocketbooks, but as human beings, and I respected them as my fellow men. They were the salt of the earth. To all of them, I bid farewell and wished them the best. My goal in life was to be a moving spirit, maintaining tradition, but on the other hand, accepting the new ideas of the young generation, helping as many people as I could, being a friend to all, which is a difficult task, to say the least. Granted, I was extremely territorial, favoring our parish in South Louisiana. I could not have lived in North Louisiana. During my earthly journey, I was guided by the golden rule as I construed it. Do not do unto others what you would not want them to do to you. I saw life divided in four major periods, same as the seasons, namely spring, summer, fall, and winter. I was entering the late winter of my life with poor condition, a physical wreck, practically a helpless cripple. Until 3 or 4 years ago, I looked at life much differently through colored lens, rose-colored lens. La vie en rose. Those were the halcyon days. Then the lens changed, became a gloomy and cheerless gray, the color of the desperate feeling of helplessness and having to depend on others for even the simplest everyday tasks, which plagued me as my situation rapidly worsened. I was getting in the way. Pretty soon I would be unable to walk. Those halcyon days that I enjoyed were over, had become history, would never return, and had become troubled and tumultuous. This was a sensation I could not endure. My psyche could not tolerate it. I knew there was relief, voluntary departures, a decision quite easy for me to make under these irreversible circumstances. Not only did I do myself a favor, but to the others, I leaned too heavily on. I appreciated and knew they put on a good face and said they were glad to aid and succor the humble writer as this public semi-autobiographical Jew when I sensed the bother and inconvenience and, yes, the annoyance and vexation I caused them, although they concealed it very well. I thank them for their effort and patience. There is a time for living and a time for dying. For me, it was unquestionably the latter. Fall is a time for dying, the annual ritual of transition from summer's lush wealth to winter's bleak bankruptcy. To my children, grandchildren, and those intimate with me, I say lend an ear and listen well to my leave-taking. Do not be sad and aggrieved by my departure. It is for the best. On the contrary, be happy that my worldly torment, suffering, and agony have ceased. Join in this celebration of my life with a good heart. Remember, no tears, only smiles and comprehension of my having been released from my miserable situation. Rejoice, I have conquered my affliction. Celebrate my victory over pain and suffering. Especially to my children and grandchildren, remember the good times we had together, the Christmases, the Easters, the Thanksgivings, the Sunday barbecues, the long summer days enjoying the cool, refreshing waters of the swimming pools, both at the old house and at the new one, the school events and the other happy occasions when laughter was the order of the day. Laugh today and you recall and joke about them. Be pleased, do not mourn me. To my many friends, do not offer condolences to my survivors, but on the contrary, tender felicitations to them for my long term of existence. To you out-of-towners, Lafayette guys to be specific, recollect your visits to Ville Platte, especially for the extraordinary and somewhat unusual birthday parties you organized for me at my law offices before I donned the black robe, ascended the bench, and became respectable, particularly the birthday cakes from Pooh-Parts. To those wonderful friends who gave me the greatest retirement birthday party ever witnessed in Pilpa. It was the Moulin Rouge on the Takeoff Road. That birthday cake from Pooh-Parts somehow presented itself. It was even on TV. Folks are still talking about it. To the multitude of local friends and supporters of both races, thank you for sharing your sincere acquaintanceship with me. It meant a whole lot to me. I knew you were true friends, not fair weather friends. And I could always depend on you, rain or shine. Again, thank you for that fellowship. The truth of the matter was that this old, decrepit, lame dinosaur had become extinct and was an outdated figure who no longer fit in the mold, the modern-day world and age scheme. I had run the full cycle, the spring, summer, fall, and winter of my life. My journey, which had been for the most part a satisfying one, had reached the terminal, which has prompted this posthumous farewell. I want to be remembered as being a good guy, a man of the people, a fair man, one who gave everyone their just due, regardless of their station in life, a worthwhile member of Evangeline Parish Society, a genuine South Louisianian, of French descent and not ashamed, but proud of it, who loved to converse in our own French or Creole patois, which I submit is more closely akin to the true French language spoken in France than the one spoken in many other South Louisiana parishes. Not as an aristocrat or patrician, but as a Mediterranean man, and as the last Renaissance man of Evangeline Parish. I may not have marched to the beat of the same drum as the great majority of us, but as Frank Sinatra crooned decades ago, I did it my way. I hope that history treats me kindly. So I take my final bow from this great stage of life, and the curtain drops. Sayonara, Preston Oakland.
Thank you, Mr. Gene, and thank you all for being here today. And now, as specifically requested by Judge Preston N. Oakland, eat, drink, and be merry. Let's have one last round of applause.